The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Nothing perfect or considerable, we're so damn good. It's the story of your life, you're moving down the page, and you know you're on your way. The story of your life, you live it every day. You can run, you run, but you won't get away.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi. It is Inauguration Day, 20th day of January, 2021. Every 4 years, the President of the United States is sworn into office, and today it's Joe Biden. Congratulations to the President-elect. They spoke last night. I'll play you a little bit of their memorial service for those who have suffered and died during the COVID pandemic. The biggest news of the morning is not what you might think. You might think it's the pardons. President Trump issued 143 pardons and commutations, including of Steve Bannon, Elliot Broidy, and a few others. All pardons are news, but not for many people except those who receive it. The biggest news was yesterday's declaration by Secretary of State Pompeo that China is committing genocide against the Uyghur Muslims. And by the way, they also identified genocide against other ethnic groups. The Wall Street Journal reports the Trump administration concluded that China has committed genocide and crimes against humanity against the Uyghur ethnic group, delivering a forceful condemnation of Beijing over a mass repression campaign that is yet to prompt tough international action. This morning in the Wall Street Journal, Secretary Pompeo has a commentary, which you really need to hear. I've got a lot of great audio. I will play it for you. President Trump gave a fine farewell address yesterday. President-elect Biden gave good remarks last night. Tony Blinken, the new Secretary of State, incoming, not yet voted on, made some very reassuring statements at the confirmation hearing yesterday. There's a lot of news going on, as there always will be, at the beginning of an administration. But this column by Secretary of State Pompeo, there's no better way to leave office than by condemning moral atrocity. Before it spreads and before the world decides simply that China is too big to call out. The Chinese Communist Party, writes Secretary Pompeo, like other authoritarian regimes, has never cherished human life. That's clear from the well-known horrors the party inflicted on the Chinese people during the Great Leap Forward and the Cultural Revolution, the Tiananmen Square Massacre, and decades of repression of Tibetans and Falun Gong practitioners. Yet the free world has become dangerously inured to this bloody history. So long as we remain silent, communist Chinese party elites will continue to commit human rights abuses against the people of China with impunity. We cannot allow this cycle to continue. Today, after careful deliberation, I have determined that the People's Republic of China, under the direction and control of the Chinese Communist Party, has committed genocide and crimes against humanity against the predominantly Muslim Uyghurs and other ethnic and religious and minority groups, including ethnic Kazakhs and Kyrgyz. This announcement is the result of an exhaustive year-long investigation that has spanned the globe and benefited from the efforts of government and non-governmental partners to document this nightmare, as well as bipartisan support of Congress. The facts are chilling. Since 2017, the Communist Party has forced more than 1 million people into internment camps in the Xinjiang region on the pretext that they need, quote, re-education. Arbitrary and indefinite detentions lasting months or years at a time are common inside this modern gulag. Survivors tell of torture, sexual abuse, including rape, forced labor, the use of electric shock to extract false confessions, unexplained death in custody. Uyghurs scarcely fare better outside the camps. Xinjiang has become a proving ground for an Orwellian surveillance state. Of particular repugnance to pro-life Americans, and key in my determination that the atrocities in Xinjiang rise to the level of genocide, is the Communist Party's efforts to stop Uyghur women from giving birth via forced abortion and sterilization. Involuntary contraception measures, such as forced insertions of uterine devices, are also deployed. They want to destroy us as a people, said one such victim. The party has coerced Uyghur women to marry non-Uyghur men and separated Uyghur children from their families. Birth rates in Xinjiang dropped roughly 24% from 2018 to 2019, compared with a 4.2% decline across China overall. Not every campaign of genocide involves gas chambers or firing squad. Throughout this campaign, Communist Party apparatchiks have denied international observers unhindered access to Xinjiang and dismissed reliable reporting on the abuses. Xi Jinping's regime has justified the camps as necessary for educating local populations, countering terrorism, and alleviating poverty. The party has even promoted its attempts to curb Uyghur births as a women's empowerment effort. The truth is far darker. The Communist Party's persecution of Uyghurs, like its persecution of other religious minority groups, is simply an effort to sinicize and eliminate the Uyghur faith, culture, and population. The U.S. has led the world in exposing these horrors and promoting accountability for the perpetrators. In March of 2019, we co-hosted the first of several events at the United Nations alongside Canada, Germany, the Netherlands, and the United Kingdom to alert the world to this vile mass attack on human dignity. We've issued a business advisory and withhold release orders to assure American supply chains don't support Uyghur forced labor. We've unleashed sanctions against senior Communist Party leaders responsible for the repression across Xinjiang, the only country to have done so. We are also the first country to label the repression taking place in Xinjiang as genocide and crimes against humanity. Thomas Jefferson, America's first Secretary of State, wrote, "The mass of mankind has not been born with saddles on their backs, nor a favored few booted and spurred, ready to ride them legitimately by the grace of God. The genocidal blows struck against the Uyghurs aren't localized as Xinjiang. They are also an offense against the concept of universal human dignity that America's founders championed. In the anguished cries from Xinjiang, the U.S. hears the echoes of Nazi Germany, Rwanda, Bosnia, and Darfur. May all nations that hear them likewise bear witness to the strain of the stain of the century, the Chinese Communist Party's genocide and crimes against humanity." That's the Secretary of State. That's candid, that's complete, that is irrefutable, and other nations ought to follow. And by the way, I applaud Secretary Designate Blinken for endorsing that yesterday. We'll play that a little bit later. In the Washington Post this morning, there's also a story. China turbocharges bid to discredit Western vaccines, spread conspiracy theories. Are you getting the picture? From Jerry Xi. Europe and Australia should reject the hasty American vaccines linked to elderly deaths, say Chinese scientists. Western media is refusing to investigate the Pfizer shot dangers, fumed a statewide television anchor. The coronavirus could be a plot involving former U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, suggested a state editor. And the real origin of the virus, perhaps the U.S. Army's Fort Detrick should be investigated, intoned Foreign Ministry spokesman. 1 year after the coronavirus was widely reported in China, including on this show 1 year ago, ahead of every other media outlet, as far as I know, repeatedly and daily, the country's state media and officials are again pitching a flood of theories about its origins not in China and which vaccines are safe, not American. The reports claimed by officials and checked online this month appear to be part of a renewed Chinese push to cast the blame for the pandemic elsewhere. Can you believe this? Can you believe this? Now, this is not Republican or Democrat. This is freedom here against totalitarian genocidal thugs. And we just got to be very, very clear. Secretary Blinken, or Secretary Designated Blinken, he'll be confirmed today, I believe, assures that we will consult with Israel and allies before returning to the Iran deal. He also assured that Jerusalem will remain the capital and recognized as such. And then domestically, yes, Trump granted clemency to 143 people last night, including Steve Bannon, the rapper Lil Wayne, former Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick, Rick Renzi of Arizona, former member of Congress, Duke Cunningham of California, former member of Congress, both had already completed their prison terms, Robin Hayes of North Carolina, another congressman, finishing probation, before finally signing the paperwork. The president spent much of Tuesday debating who to give pardons to and who not to. It happens every time. None of it will ever reach the level of the Clinton administration's pardon in terms of outrage. So don't spend a lot of time on that. Focus instead on the incoming administration and what they're about to do and undertake. More on that when we come back. My number is 1-800-520-1234. Do you think Hollywood, do you think the NBA is going to respond to the recognition that genocide is part and parcel of their leading sponsor or one of their leading sponsors' worldview? Stay tuned. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384.
I like taxis, I like trains, I like Brooklyn when it rains, but I love Betsy. I like walking after dark.
Welcome back, America. It's you.
Prospect Park, but I love Betsy.
Never heard this song until yesterday. It's from some Broadway musical. Someone sent it to me. Makes me laugh.
And the Brooklyn Bridge by bike. Heck, there's lots of stuff I like, but I love Betsy, and she loves me.
Makes you laugh. All right, welcome back, America. Let me tell you, I will be joining NBC sometime between 1 and 2 today for comments on President Biden's inaugural address, I'm sure. Right now, if you're watching on my YouTube channel, good morning, good to see you. I've got my little warm-up on here, but I haven't shaved yet. Now, normally I don't shave for the show. I shave after the show, after I work out. But I will, however, before going on NBC, get my Harry's razor out and get the greatest shave in America. And if you are not yet a customer of Harry's, just go and give it a try. I saw it in a store recently. They used to be subscription sales only, and I still think subscription sales are the easiest because they just come to your house and you go through the blades and you don't even think about it. They last a long time. You might get a little surplus of blades. But I had my Cleveland Browns orange handle out this week, and it wasn't enough. They got us to the playoffs. They got us to beat Pittsburgh in the first round on the wild card weekend, but the orange handle will reign next year. But Harry, so if you're watching NBC today, Lester Holt, Savannah Guthrie, I'll pop up, tell you what I think about President Biden's speech. I hope it's a good one. I love inaugural addresses. The Lift of a Driving Dream was Richard Nixon's first inaugural address in 1969. There's a phrase or two, the new frontier in President Kennedy's. There's always a phrase or two. We have nothing to fear but fear itself in FDR's. There are always moments of eloquence in a well-crafted speech that stand out. So I'll be listening for those. My guess is that historian John Meacham is helping President Biden. And there's no difference in that than any other president seeks the assistance of people who write primarily for a living to work on their themes and their ideas, although inevitably they are the speeches of the president. And I'm hoping for that. But when and if you watch NBC and you see my 1 minute of commentary or 2 minutes of commentary, think to yourself, huh, I'll try Harry's Razors. That looks pretty good. It's not only pretty good, it's great. Here's what I told you about. Tony Blinken is going to be the new Secretary of State. And he testified on three key things yesterday. Here is cut number 17. He is talking with Ted Cruz about Jerusalem.
Final question, because my time has expired. Do you agree that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel?
Mm-hmm.
And do you commit that the United States will keep our embassy in Jerusalem?
Yes and yes.
Thank you.
That's what I like. Yes and yes. There you go. That is terrific news. Cut number 18. Ben Cardin, who's the incoming chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, asks about Israel and security. Cut number 18.
First, let me start with this very basic proposition, which is that our commitment to Israel's security is sacrosanct. And this is something that the president-elect feels very strongly. His very first trip when he was a member of this committee as a senator, his first foreign trip was to Israel. He met with a prime minister by the name of Golda Meir. She had a young aide by the name of Yitzhak Rabin, and he has worked with every Israeli prime minister since then. And so the foundation of our relationship is support for Israel's security.
Incoming President Biden was present when Richard Nixon saved Israel in the Yom Kippur War, and when he met with Golda Meir and Yitzhak Rabin, it had to be close to the Yom Kippur War. I'm not sure on which side, but I do believe that we can rely on incoming Biden people to keep the security relationship strong. There is a story in the Jerusalem Post this morning that Mauritania and Indonesia are this close to signing on to the Abraham Accord. They didn't get it done. That may be good news because it gives the new president, the new Secretary of State, the new National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, the opportunity to show suit very early in the new administration the embrace of the Abraham Accord, which would be good for the world. So even though it didn't get done, it might get done early, and that would be a good thing. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Have you read my blog today? 300 million little USAs. Your doorstep is just a click away. We'll get together one of these days. How can you be as nice as me? I'm not from the same slice as me. Where do we go from here, my friend? Is this the way?
Welcome back, America. I was talking with John Andrzejczyk last night about current deep partisan divisions in the United States. Told him I love playing Slice every morning because we are everyone. And everyone is welcome here, from left to right, critics and fans, 1-800-520-1234. The press is gathering early this morning at Joint Base Andrews for the farewell ceremony as President Trump will speak and then leave at 8 a.m. East Coast time. We will carry those remarks if, in fact, it rolls off at the correct time as the president prepares to depart Washington on Air Force One for the last time, as far as we know. The Anthony Blinken testimony, I want to finish that. Then I'll do a market report. Then I'll bring you some of President-elect Biden's comments yesterday. Anthony Blinken had an exchange with Lindsey Graham about Secretary Pompeo's declaration of genocide in the Chinese Communist Party-run Xinjiang province. Here is Secretary of State Blinken and Lindsey Graham talking. Cut number 19.
Secretary Pompeo designated the Chinese Communist Party as having engaged in genocide regarding the Uyghur Muslim population. Do you agree with that designation?
That would be my judgment as well.
You do agree?
Yes.
Yeah, we're on a good start here. I just very much appreciate that. Do you believe that the Chinese Communist Party misled the world about the coronavirus?
I do.
What price, if any, should they pay?
When it comes to China's role in the virus, I think there's an investigation that is ongoing. We obviously want to see the results of that investigation, but there's some things we already know.
If they don't cooperate, what should we do?
I think that we have to look at very hard, because that cooperation, this is really the point, I think, of where we need to go on this. What we do know already with regard to China and the virus is that they did not provide transparency. They did not share information. They did not give access when it mattered most in the early days of this virus. Had they done so, it's possible that the course of the virus would have been different and we could have dealt with it sooner and more effectively. My sense, Senator, going forward, is that what we should be focusing on, I know people talk about the punitive, I would be very focused on the preventative, which is to say,
sure,
what steps will China take going forward?
Like wet markets.
For example,
right.
Yes, a very, very good example. You.
Yeah, I agree with that. When it comes to Taiwan, it's been the policy of the United States to basically, for lack of a better term, to guarantee Taiwanese democracy. What's your view of that?
My view is we have an abiding and longstanding and bipartisan commitment to Taiwan and to the Taiwan Relations Act. We need to make sure that they have the means to deter aggression, to defend themselves. I'd like to see them, Taiwan even more engaged in the world. It's in many ways a model democracy, a strong economy, and a technological powerhouse. And, of course, the way they've dealt with COVID-19 has a lot of lessons to teach us.
But if the Chinese Communist Party decided to use military force against the population in Taiwan, that would create great upheaval throughout the world, and they would pay a heavy price. Is that fair to say?
That would be a grievous mistake on their part.
Yeah. Hong Kong. Seems to be that they're not really paying much attention to what Congress is doing and what this administration is doing regarding Hong Kong. What can we do to get their attention that we're not doing?
So I wish we had taken some steps earlier. The national security law, the crackdown on media, the crackdown on free speech, on assembly, all of that has, I think, put in tatters the notion of real freedom and autonomy in Hong Kong, which were guarantees in the handover. One of the things, this is not going to fix the problem, but I'd like to see us, for example, be able to take in some of those fleeing Hong Kong and fleeing the repression for standing up for their democratic rights. And I know there's some legislation that looks at doing that. But I think we have to take a hard look about what our position should be on the presence of institutions and companies there. Is it going to remain a hub and a financial center? Does Beijing then get both sides of the benefit? We should take a hard look at that. Yeah.
I've got to say, that was very, very, very encouraging. Now, I have been told for years, this is the old Washington, D.C., 6 degrees of separation. Here it's 1 degree of separation. One of my closest friends in the world who you've heard on this show is Dan Poneman, former Deputy Secretary of Energy under President Obama, and my college roommate, along with another guy named Mark Guerin and a couple other people, which is a band of brothers in college, and we have stayed close friends for 45 years. He and Tony Blinken are very close friends. They played in a band together, Coalition of the Willing, I believe they called it. And they do charity gigs around D.C. I went and heard them play at the British Embassy once. They're just good buddies. Adult buddies, not college buddies, but good buddies. And they told me for years, Blinken is smart, smart, smart. I've heard the same thing about Jake Sullivan. Well, the world, if you are smart, is you can see clearly what is going on with the Chinese Communist Party. You can see clearly what is going on with their aggression around the world, Hong Kong, the threat towards Taiwan, the cover-up of the Wuhan virus, the genocide. And to have such clarity, and on Israel, is just very, very reassuring. What do markets think this morning? Brought to you by Birch Gold. Birch Gold, of course, sponsors the morning market report every single day. And every single day I tell you the same thing. Inflation is coming. Now, I don't know when. There is a lack of the acceleration of money right now, but the world has been hosed down with between $5 and $10 trillion in aid around the globe. More money than I ever thought possible to actually throw at a problem. And more is on the way. Another $2 trillion in relief is being requested by the president-elect. And that will, of course, assist people. But then as businesses reopen, it becomes surplus capital that will seek investment or goods. And that much more money seeking pretty much the same amount of goods will cause inflation. Gold this morning is at $1,851 an ounce, $1,851. It's been down close to $1,800. It's gotten close to $2,000. I think it's going to break out. But if you want to hedge against anything happening, gold ought to be 10% of your retirement or a similar amount in your security vault. If you want it in retirement, you can roll over a portion of your IRA or 401k, and Birch Gold will handle it all. All you have to do is go to HughGold.com, HughGold.com, or text my name, Hugh, to 474747, and it's H-U-G-H. There are lots of ways to spell it. I've learned in my email. H-U-G-H. Just text that to 474747. No obligation, free information on how they set it up, where they store it, how you can get access to it once you retire, and what it does for you in terms of security. Yesterday, the Dow went up 116 points. The NASDAQ went up 198, and the S&P went up 30. And I expect a rip-roaring day today because Netflix reported results after the bell. So all after the bell and before the market opened this morning, the Netflix stock was up like $67, almost 14%. That's remarkable. Why is that? Because Netflix added 8.5 million users in Q4. And that they also gave an explanation that while they have been powered by borrowing in the past, they will borrow no more because their cash flow has now crossed cash need. So that company is set. By the way, I'm an Amazon shareholder, and I extrapolate from that report that the 8.5 million users are going to have a similar number for Amazon Prime, and that we're going to find that the disintermediation of old market structures by the virus is complete, enduring, and you have market capitulation to it. Sort of market capitulation of the fact we're not going back to theaters. We're just not. I watch News of the World, but the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt on whatever channel it's on the other night, and it's fine. You know, it's not the same thing. There's some movies like Tenet that you wish you could see in a big theater. But the world has moved on, and the stocks are reflecting that. I also saw an interesting thing. Biden great for stocks. That's something they never gave to Trump. They never, ever gave to Trump the idea that after his election, the period between election and swearing in was part of his record. It is true. It's part of Biden's record. But the election result that's being factored in is a 50-50 Senate. They're simply not going to be able to raise taxes. They're not. And the market knows that. They can roll back regulations. They are going to cancel the Keystone Pipeline permit, which I believe is illegal and will lead to very interesting litigation. They're stopping the border fence, which is not illegal. So you understand the difference there. The border fence is an act of a sovereign government that they can choose to proceed with. It's unwise to stop it. They're 350 miles away from completion, 450 miles built. I imagine it's a bargaining chip in the immigration reform to come because no wall, no deal. But they cannot simply, without due process and explanation, pull a permit upon which capital has been invested and on which people rely. It's going to throw people out of work. I really question the wisdom of President-elect Biden's choice on XL pipeline, but there it is. Speaking of President Biden, he gave a speech in Delaware yesterday, and he got emotional. Cut number two as he departed for Washington to become the president of the United States.
He said, "Don't tell me things can't change. They can, and they do. That's America. That's Delaware, a place of hope and light and limitless possibilities. And I'm honored. I'm truly honored to be your next president and commander in chief. And I'll always be a proud son of the state of Delaware." As Tommy, or better known as Chairman Carper, Senator Carper, knows, my colleagues in the Senate used to always kid me for quoting Irish poets. They thought I did it because I'm Irish. I didn't do it for that reason. I did it because they're the best poets in the world. And James Joyce was said to have told a friend that when it comes his time to pass, when he dies, he said, Dublin will be written on my heart. Well, excuse the emotion, but when I die, Delaware will be written on my heart. And the hearts of all of us, all the Bidens, we love you all.
That's a very nice moment for the president-elect. Very nice moment. I'm hoping for a good speech today. Inauguration speeches matter. More on what he had to say at the Lincoln Memorial after the break. I'll be right back. America, stay tuned. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Crowd is beginning to gather at Andrews, Joint Base Andrews. And it's a farewell crowd. It's a tradition in American political transfers of power, though it typically follows the inauguration. President Trump is the first president not to attend his successor's inauguration since Andrew Johnson. Bad blood there is pretty deep. I expect to see Vice President Pence, former President Bush. I advised against this. I wish he had gone, but he didn't. So he's departing this morning for Mar-a-Lago with the First Lady. And there will be remarks, and we will carry them in the third hour of today's show if, in fact, they come off as expected. Their farewell address yesterday was good. It was optimistic. It did not mention President-elect Biden, which, again, I would have advised more graciousness, but it was a very good speech. It just wasn't complete. And then President-elect Biden spoke at the Lincoln Memorial last night, talking about those whose lives have been lost to COVID, cut number 15.
I mean this from the bottom of my heart. If there are any angels in heaven, they're all nurses. We know from our family experience what you do, the courage, and the pain you absorb for others. So thank you. Thank you.
Well, my mom was a nurse, so I'm kind of happy about that. Cut number 16, talking again at the memorial service for the victims of COVID.
To heal, we must remember. It's hard sometimes to remember, but that's how we heal. It's important to do that as a nation. That's why we're here today. Between sundown and dusk, let us shine the lights in the darkness along the sacred pool of reflection. Remember all whom we lost.
It was visually pretty stunning. If you haven't seen it, we just played it. Go back, and if you're watching on YouTube, you saw it. Now, yesterday was a day of confirmation hearings, and many interesting things were said. Here is Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin talking to Alejandro Mayorkas, who is the designated secretary of DHS, Department of Homeland Security. Josh Hawley has put a hold on his nomination, but this was an exchange with Ron Johnson, cut number 5.
Senator Feinstein credited you with the DACA program. I've been arguing, I think accurately, that the DACA program, as beneficial it is for people and addresses a particular problem, also was used as a catalyst by coyotes and created the surge that produced that 2014 humanitarian crisis where 137,000 people in total, the unaccompanied children and family units across this border illegally, and we had to deal with that. And the Obama administration recognized that, and you were deputy secretary at that point in time. Just quick answer these questions. In reaction to that, it is true that the Obama administration built the facility in McAllen, Texas, correct?
Yes, sir.
And that's the same facility that has the chain-link fences that people on the other side of the aisle have referred to as putting children in cages, correct?
Yes, sir.
So an admission against interest, but we all knew that. Again, I would use confirmation hearings the way Lindsey Graham did to look forward, not backwards. Janet Yellen did so with Steve Daines, senator from Montana, yesterday. Cut number 4.
Do you agree that raising taxes while the economy is still recovering from the pandemic is a bad idea?
Well, Senator, the focus right now is on providing relief and on helping families keep a roof over their head and food on the table, and not on raising taxes. But longer term, I think it's important to the Biden program of Build Back Better, investing in people, investing in infrastructure, investing in research and development, in manufacturing, in things that will create good jobs and make our economy more productive, we need to think about taxes in the context of a package that aims to do those things. And to the extent that financing is required for these very valuable investments, I believe it should be come in a fair way.
Now, that means taxes will rise next year, probably in the reconciliation package. Next year, not this year. Finally, Tim Scott talking to Ms. Yellen. By the way, she's very qualified to be the Secretary of Treasury. She's been the chairman of the Fed, for goodness sake. They talk about a $15 minimum wage, and Senator Scott is eloquent. Cut number three.
That has been presented to us is a package that focuses on some priorities that I think will actually hurt our economy as much as it would improve our economy. One in particular is the issue of raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. I will say that I've been talking to businesses around the country and specifically at home. The one thing that even the Congressional Budget Office recognizes is that by increasing the minimum wage to $15 an hour, it could shutter somewhere around 3.7 million jobs on the high end, a minimum of 1.3 million jobs in our economy. And the last thing this economy needs as we attempt to recover is a loss of 1.3 to 3.7 million jobs. But in addition to that, it would increase the cost of doing business significantly. It would certainly devastate the opportunity to develop new jobs in rural America and rural South
Senator
Carolina.
Scott is such a breath of fresh air. I'll be right back, America, hour number two on the day of the inauguration of President Biden. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about a dollar a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384.